I'm Chris Farrell from the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, a wacky weekend morning show, part of the Gonna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out right now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and the opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows over at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. As always, I'm Chris, and today I have David Gallagher here to talk some Spider-Man with us. David, why don't you give us a little bit of an introduction?
About the game or about me?
About you.
All right, so I write video games for a living. I've worked on Ghost Recon most recently, both Ghost Recon Breakpoint and Ghost Recon Wildlands for Ubisoft. But also, I was a pioneer of digital comics at Marvel Comics, working on the early digital comics of Spider-Man, especially Spider-Man and the Sinister Six, Spider-Man versus Doctor Doom, Spider-Man versus Sandman. I've written for Marvel Comics and DC Comics, and I've been a superhero collector since I was a child, and was raised on Spider-Man and his amazing friends. So I do feel like between the video game experience and the comic book experience, I think I'm ready to talk about Spider-Man 2, The Sinister Six.
So what was it that really got you hooked on Spider-Man?
Well, when I was a child, Spider-Man appeared on The Electric Company, which was sort of like a companion series to Sesame Street. Rita Moreno was in it. Morgan Freeman was in it. And Spider-Man had this sort of like, Spider-Man, nobody knows you, Spider-Man. And it was sort of like this live action Spider-Man skit where basically when Spider-Man wouldn't say anything, but there'd be word bubbles whenever over Spider-Man's head whenever he thought something. So it'd be like cake. The word cake would be above Spider-Man's head when he saw a piece of cake. It was a really good introduction to getting kids to, you know, learn about Spider-Man. So that was sort of my early introduction. And then right as that was like coming to the fore, I think it was CBS at the time, was doing the Marvel Superheroes special shows. So, you know, obviously you had the Incredible Hulk TV show, but they also did like a Doctor Strange TV pilot. They did like six or, I can get the episode count wrong, maybe it was 13 episodes of a Spider-Man show, and they did Captain America movies. Nicholas Hammond was Spider-Man, and he would like swing from building to building, and he would battle ninjas and clones and criminals. And so that was sort of my second introduction to Spider-Man. But really the time that I sort of fell in love with him, it wasn't really him that I fell in love with, but it was one of his colleagues, Firestar, in the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends TV show, which debuted in September of 1981, so almost 40 years ago. And in that cartoon, Spider-Man teamed up with Firestar, who was like a super hot redhead, literally, because she had fire powers. And then Iceman, a member of the X-Men. And together as the Spider-Friend, they battled the Red Skull, and Loki, and Magneto, or that's what they call him, but you and I know he's Magneto. But they battled Magneto, they battled Juggernaut, you know, so it was a really powerful show, and it was my atlas into the Marvel Universe. So, you know, I learned about S.H.I.E.L.D., and I learned about the X-Men, and I learned about Captain America, and I learned about the Hulk. So there was just so much there. And so when I finally started collecting comics, probably about 10 to 15 years later, you know, I gravitated towards Spider-Man. And that was right during the Venom, Todd McFarlane era with the symbiotic suit and Spider-Man and Mary Jane had gotten married, and Eric Larson had come onto the book. There was so much excitement about Peter Parker, and I remember very vividly when Eric Larson had taken over, that there was the Revenge of the Sinister Six storyline, where Dr. Octopus had adamantium tentacle arms, and Hobgoblin was there, and Sandman was there, and Electro was there, and it created just this fantastic, like, menagerie of, like a maniacal menagerie of evil villains. And right before I got into college was the debut of the Spider-Man cartoon on Fox Kids. So there they called it like the Insidious Six, and you had the Chameleon and you had Rhino. And then from there, just a few years later, I started working at Marvel Comics, and my introduction to Spider-Man then became like this passion of dealing with Spider-Man, because we had worked on a range of digital comics with Spider-Man and Doctor Doom, and Spider-Man and Sandman, and John Byrne had just done Spider-Man Chapter One. So there's a lot of Spider-Man history in my lifetime. And so my introduction to Spider-Man sort of helped catapult me into working at Marvel in a lot of ways. It was a foundational experience.
How many people get to go into comics working on the thing that really got them interested in it in the first place? That's just really cool.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I was a neuroscience undergrad. But when I went to grad school, there was an opportunity to, they're like, you can study whatever you want when you're in grad school. And I'm like, I'm going to study comics. And so I went to Goddard Comics in Plainfield, Vermont. And as part of my last project, I drew my resume like on a lark and faxed it to Marvel Comics. And I drew it as like this really bad, like stick figure Scott McCloud understanding comics kind of thing. And like 3 days later, like the day after Christmas, they called me up. Marvel called me up and were like, do you want to intern for us? And so I got to intern for them and then work on staff and then work freelance. So it was really just a really powerful experience. And I don't know how many other people have that opportunity, but I feel really blessed and lucky to have gotten into comics that way. I was passionate. I worked really hard. I learned a lot of really hard, powerful lessons, met just a lot of really tremendously talented people. So by and large, you know, I was just really, really pleased with the experience, and I'm really happy to have that. Yeah, I don't think there are a lot of people that are able to really sort of catapult that. I think so often people's dreams sort of get deferred. I remember when I cashed my first check from Marvel at the bank. Spider-Man used to be on the checks of Marvel. You would take it to the bank and people were like, this is a check from Marvel Comics? I always wanted to work in comics or whatever. And then somebody would tell the story about how they just gave up their passion. I'm like, oh my God, why give up your passion? You know, I was like 20 something, 25 or whatever. But I think some people just get derailed when they're younger for a broad range of reasons. I'm not putting the onus on them, but you know, I was bullheaded and stubborn enough to really just stick with it. And I'm really glad I did in the long run.
Well, I'm glad you did too, because that led to you getting to come on here and talk to me about some wonderful Spider-Man stuff.
Thank you. And it was working comics actually that led me into working into video games. So I do feel doubly blessed in that, my supervisor at Ubisoft, before he hired me, was like, I love your work in comics, and I don't have any comic work for you, but I think you'd be perfect for this video game I'm doing for Ubisoft. Would you be interested? And yeah, so I do feel like having worked both on the comic side and then on the video game side, there are a lot of things that I've learned about game design and level design that I think are really... I hope will enhance our conversation about this really fun game that I had the opportunity to play when it first debuted, but just recently refreshed my love and understanding of it. over the last couple of weeks.
Well, one of the things I'm assuming that it would help you out with is making good villains and finding good villains. And I mean, this game has some good ones in it.
Well, I think, yeah, so the premise of the game is that Dr. Octopus is super, super frustrated with Spider-Man, like super, super annoyed. And he's like, you know what we're going to do? In order to get revenge on Spider-Man, we're going to go after his pal, Peter Parker. We're going to take the Sinister Six. We're going to go to his house and we're going to get him. And when we get him, that will bring Spider-Man out. But however, Peter Parker's not there. So the Sinister Six kidnap Aunt May to get to Peter Parker to get to Spider-Man. Eventually it works because Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Spoilers for people who haven't read the series or caught up with Spider-Man in the last, you know, 50 some odd years, but that's a big deal. I feel like I'm breaking some important news on the show. Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Anyway, Spider-Man comes out, and yes, we get some great villains. You know, I think the first one we fight is Mysterio. We battle Sandman. We battle the Vulture. We battle Scorpion. We battle Dr. Octopus. I mean, there's a lot of nuance. I'm missing one. Rhino? Is that the other one? Sandman?
Sandman, Vulture.
Mysterio, Rhino.
Not Rhino.
It's not Hobgoblin. Is it Electro?
No, because that's the one that surprises me, because he's in everything.
Yes. No, so it is... Oh, man, I totally...
Craven the Hunter.
I was like, I know who this is. And the reason I remember that's Craven the Hunter, I mean, it took me a minute, is Craven the Hunter is not in the Eric Larson story because he was dead and they got some other monster to fill in the gaps. So, yes, Craven the Hunter. So, yeah, so the first level with Mysterio, it's really interesting. Because I think you go to Coney Island, you know, and you fight Mysterio. And that feels so fun. You're against roller coasters and merry-go-rounds, and there's just so much nuance to the level design. And immediately when you see Mysterio, he is like casting illusions everywhere. And there's a real pattern to how you defeat him. And in a way, it reminds me a little bit of Spider-Man Far From Home when Peter and Mysterio are fighting. You know, it's that cool, like, which one's the illusion, which one's real. But I love that fight. I mean, it's really a fantastically well-manicured fight in terms of how it really sort of sets up the other fights. I mean, the Vulture fight is... You know, Spider-Man dealing with an aerial foe. And I think that's really interesting. And the fact that Spider-Man has all of his, or for the most part, I think all of his abilities in this game. He has spider sense. He has web swinging. He can climb on anything. He's pretty strong. And he gets that cool, like, spider armor, you know, as like a little quirky Mario level pickup. You know, I do love that. So I do feel like there's a lot of authenticity to that. So yes, but anyway, you're fighting Vulture. That's really cool. Craven, I found to be one of the more difficult fights. Scorpion's really interesting. So I do feel like it there is a lot of nuance and almost comic booky. Yeah, a very comic booky feel to this game. That reminds me a little bit of, I would say it's not as complicated of a game as, say, the Spider-Man arcade game where you're fighting your Spider-Man and you're partnered with Black Cat and Hawkeye and Sub-Mariner in some sort of weird Marvel team-up kind of thing, battling Venom. Or like Maximum Carnage, which is a little bit more layered and it's two-player and whatever. But I do feel like this game really feels like an early 90s comic in terms of the way that, you know, the Daily Bugle gives you prompts as to what to do in the game. Like, open this valve, sneak through here, destroy this gearbox, you know, and you see the Daily Bugle, you see some limited animations, but it feels like a six-part Marvel comic book crossover. You know what I mean? So I'm sort of on a tangent because I was thinking about all the nuances and the cool things I really love about the game. But yeah, I love that it feels like a comic book.
I mean, off the top of my head, I don't know if this is a story that actually happened in the comics, but it would really surprise me if it wasn't, even if they took a few different stories and pieced them together. Because, I mean, honestly, what's the best way to get a young guy to come out and come fight you?
Right.
Go attack his mama.
Yeah. I mean, you attack my mama, man, I'm coming after you. I mean, it's sort of like a version of Taken at that point. But yeah, it definitely has that feel, and that's what I mean, is like Spider-Man is pairing off against each villain individually, and it has a real good sense of how these characters work, and each level is really designed to elicit that same sort of feeling. You know, I really love Kraven's level because it's all these trees, you know, and all of these nooks and crannies, and it does feel like a comic book, or maybe an episode of the animated series. I really love that look and feel of it all.
And the villains that they picked, I mean, just by nature of being on a Game Boy Color, you have to leave some of the big names out. But everybody here is a big name.
Yeah, I agree. I think the name that, I mean, for the most part, I think everybody is just incredibly powerful and incredibly well nuanced. I think the only character that really doesn't work, I wouldn't say doesn't work because that's not true. I think the only one that doesn't have the sort of name cachet is maybe Scorpion, you know, because Sandman was in, I mean, Mysterio was in a game, you know, Vulture, even though he wasn't in, I mean, Mysterio was in a movie, you know, Dr. Octopus has been in a movie, Sandman has been in a movie, Kraven while he hasn't been in a movie, or maybe he was like nodded to in Spider-Man Far From Home or whatever, but Kraven did have that really epic Kraven's Last Hunt storyline, and so yeah, for the most part, Vulture, I mean, is one of the only, Vulture was in a Spider-Man Homecoming, and the only one who sort of doesn't fit for me, Scorpion, kinda. You know, you don't see him in any of the other movies, but by and large, I mean, that's still 5 out of 6 marquee villains. It's great, especially when you're not using Carnage, Green Goblin, Hobgoblin, Venom, you know? If you're not using any of them, this is definitely the game for you.
And even with Scorpion, this might just be me trying to remember things weird, but I seem to remember him having a rather large part in the 90s cartoon.
He had not just a large part in the 90s cartoon. One of the things that is interesting about Scorpion is that he was in the 60s cartoon. He was in Spider-Man's Amazing Friends. He was then in the 90s cartoon. And he's a big part of the Spider-Man movie game that you play as the 2002 Spider-Man movie game that has Tobey Maguire as a voice actor. The Scorpion is basically fused to the suit. I mean, so if you played that game, you definitely have a good idea of sort of who he is. I mean, Scorpion is sort of like a very consistent sort of character throughout in terms of Spider-Man's legacy, in terms of his appearances on various shows or whatnot. So yeah, he is not he's no schlub, mind you. He just doesn't, I think, have the same resonance as Dr. Octopus or Vulture, these other characters who have had, I think, a little bit more recent cachet over the last couple of years. And I would say that Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery, I know I'm going to get some flack for this, but I think Spider-Man has a more consistent, varied Rogues Gallery than any other hero in comics, including Batman. I mean, Batman has some great villains, don't get me wrong. And Superman's no slouch in that department either. But when you talk about the range, and yes, they're all generally animal themed. That being said, you know, the main character's name is Spider-Man. Of course, he's going to face a range of colorful animal-based enemies, you know, from the rhino to the scorpion to the octopus, you know, whatever. But I do think that they make such a great use of these characters and all of their quirks as you're going through each and every one of these stages with the characters as a big boss.
Oh, we're going to go figure out which animal would be our villain alter ego as I drop some promos for a few other shows.
Fantastic.
Called The Working Man's Nerdist, Tales from the Fandom is a weekly podcast where David talks with a guest about the fandoms that they love. Whether it's classics like Star Trek, Star Wars and Tolkien, or new ones like Game of Thrones or Harry Potter. Anime, books, TV shows, movies, role-playing, video games, cosplay and more are discussed. Each episode is different, based on the guest. No fandom is too big or too small. Subscribe to Tales from the Fandom and join in on the fun.
Hey there, do you like movies, cartoons, video games, anime, and everything in between? Then we have a show for you. The Four Nerds by Nerds podcast. Every week, Josh and Ben bring you all the latest and greatest in movie reviews, news, commentaries, interviews, special guests, and tons of bonus episodes. New episodes come out every Monday. We also make great nerdy content on our YouTube channel. You can find our show anywhere podcasts are found. The Four Nerds by Nerds podcast, your one stop for all your nerdy needs. Stay nerdy, my friends.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So, David, we kind of got into it a little bit before. This is a pretty solid game. There's no other way to say it.
This is a solid game for the Game Boy Color game. That is two decades old, really. This game is a solid, solid Spider-Man game that has a lot of replayability. It is not too difficult. And has enough Easter eggs for you to enjoy it as either a casual fan or a hardcore fan.
And one of the things I always hear people going on about is graphics with these older games, and especially handheld things. You got to remember, you're looking at something that was meant to be played on a 2 or 3 inch screen. So if you're watching it on YouTube on your 55 inch TV now, of course it's going to look a little pixelated. That's not a real problem in my eyes at all.
Right. No, I think this game holds up incredibly well. You know, what's interesting about this game is the 90s in particular saw a slew, 90s through early 2000s, saw a slew of Spider-Man games. I mean, obviously, Maximum Carnage, which I think a lot of people of our age remember. I mean, it was very preeminent as a game. There was an amazing Spider-Man Sega game that I absolutely loved. Spider-Man Arcade, which we talked about. And then there was the Spider-Man cartoon game on the Nintendo 64, which was fantastic, albeit incredibly difficult. But still, really fantastic. You play it and it opens up with the Spider-Man theme song from the cartoon and that very, like, robotic Spider-Man. But this game, for its nimbleness, its ability to play so portably, and remember, this is pre-Nintendo Switch, pre-Lynx, pre-Sega Nomad. This game had just incredible versatility and playability. Three different levels. I mean, I think that there's just a lot to be said for it. And yeah, regardless of whether or not it's highly animated, you get so much atmosphere out of it. And Spider-Man moves so incredibly well. It's not like you're playing Spider-Man on the Atari 2600. No, you're playing Spider-Man on a GameCube on a Game Boy Color. And it really conveys a lot of really good sense of adventure. And even though the animations are limited, it's still, everything moves with such ease. I had no problem picking up the game and playing through it and watching Spider-Man web swing. Yes, there's occasionally a few, like, I meant to stick on this wall as opposed to this wall, a few, like, directional control issues. But by and large, This game plays well. The color's great. The story is fun. And there's a fluidity to the way that, even though it is some limited animation, a real fluidity to the way that Spider-Man moves, and you feel like you're Spider-Man. And that's great to me. I mean, they didn't limit Spider-Man's powers. They gave you the whole barrage of what it is Spidey could do. And you even can run out of web fluid. You know what I mean? That's awesome to me. That is a very patented Peter Parker problem right there. That is the old Parker luck right there.
Yeah, because this is before the Spider-Man Tobey Maguire movies, so it was all mechanical web shooters anyway.
Right.
And I love that you can run out of stuff. I love that they didn't try to do any voice acting. Although in a Game Boy Color, you're not going to get much of that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there is, in my eyes, there is literally, I mean, we're not to the point of where we're ready. There's only one thing in this game that I'm kind of iffy on, which is the kind of high-pitched electronic music, which I don't love. But because it just feels very, maybe it's because I'm working with older technology. There's kind of a shrill, tinny quality to the music now, 20 years later. But by and large, I mean, it still plays incredibly well. It still feels great. And yeah, this is pre-Tobey Maguire. We're talking about a game that really, really kicks it into high gear in terms of letting you feel like you're playing in a comic. I think the only other game that comes close in terms of its level of playing in a comic is like Comic Zone for the old Sega Genesis.
And one
thing, have you ever played that game, Comic Zone?
I haven't. I can't get very far. I'm not good at it at all.
It's so hard.
I wish I was.
So hard. Anyway, you were saying.
I mean, one of the things I keep forgetting is that this is a sequel to a previous game, which was the Game Boy version of the PS1 Spider-Man game. And that game
was great.
That is my, like, the epitome of Spider-Man games for me. I like the PS4 one, that's fine. But I will go back and play the PS1 Spider-Man game all the time.
I remember that game correctly, and now it has been 20 years since I have played it. But I want to go back. But if I remember that game correctly, Dr. Octopus is in it, Carnage is in it, Black Cat is in it, Human Torch and Punisher and Captain America all make cameos. You have to trick Rhino into ramming into a wall, and then eventually Carnage possesses Dr. Octopus and they become like Spider Carnage Oc or Dr. Octocarnage or whatever. Am I correct? Oh, and you have all the costumes. So you have the cosmic powered costume, you have the symbiote costume, you have Bagman Spider-Man costume. So there's a range of different Spider-Man costumes, if I remember correctly. And that was the first time, like, the PS4 Spider-Man game really leans in on that as its foundation of, like, this costume gives you this bonus and this costume gives you this bonus. And I even think that there was either a Spider-Man 2099 version or a Spider-Man Unlimited version of that costume as well. I mean, I'm maybe misremembering some of these things, but that is sort of what my memory is telling me about a game that's some 20 years old.
I mean, the game is old enough to drive itself to the store, so.
Yes, and pick up some beer. Right. But is that how you remember that game?
That is pretty much how I remember it. And, like, I can't remember how many times I've played through that game beating it. Like, I would do it on easy just to bust through it real fast. I'd do it on the harder levels so I can get more of an experience with it. And, I mean,
would you do the what if version where everything was super weird and freaky and disco volley?
No, I could never do that one. My brain just couldn't wrap around it.
That level is so hard. Where the watcher comes in, he's like, Spider-Man, you have beaten this game. Now you must swim through this level with fish and Black Cat dancing to disco lights. Go! What? Anyway.
I mean, it really makes me wish I had been able to find a copy of this game and actually play it. I had to watch YouTube videos, which out of all the things I've had to just watch YouTube videos for, this is one of the most disappointing for me because I really want to get my hands on this one and play it, especially because I've got enough Game Boys sitting around the house, so I just need to find the game.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's something else to play some of these old games. I have an old machine that sort of emulates some of this older vintage stuff, which has been really helpful for me because I work in video games. So I was like, but it's very interesting to go back and play some of these older vintage games, whether it's Spider-Man and the X-Men versus Arcane's Revenge, or X-Men Mutant Genesis, or that weird LJN X-Men game, or that LJN Wolverine game. I mean, there's so many really interesting games. It's so interesting because the synergy of when like Sega blew up, or the synergy of when the SNES blew up, or the synergy of when the image revolution happened, all of those sort of happened at the same time. So watching how video games and comics really sort of held each other's hands in sort of a really, really interesting courtship has been so interesting 20 years later to see. So I'm in stuff like the PlayStation Spider-Man game or Comic Zone, which we talked about, or any of these games, it's so interesting to see. Even as a video game developer now, so many of my colleagues grew up on comic books and draw a lot of inspiration from comic books. I mean, the last video game I did for Ghost Recon, I mean, there are whole names of characters that are homages to whether it's Steve Rogers or Logan or the X-Men. You know, we are fans. So it's really interesting to see 20 years ago what the people who were playing those games were fans of then. So anyway, I'm just sort of on a rant, but I'll say I love what we're talking about.
And I have to think the people who worked on this game were big comic fans too. I mean, just seeing the comic cutscenes they had in there was like the perfect way to get the story across, and something where you're not going to have any voice acting, you have limited space, you've got limited graphical abilities, and just bringing the comic visual aesthetic into the game like that is something that I really miss in games now, because why would people do that when they can have cinematic cutscenes? I wish they would do it anyway.
Right. Well, it's so interesting too, because the original Spider-Man game that we're talking about, because this is Spider-Man 2, this game spawned different sequels across different platforms. So this is the sequel to that Spider-Man game on the PlayStation. You know, this is the Game Boy Color version of that. But the game also got another sequel through PlayStation called Spider-Man 2 Inter Electro. And then another Spider-Man sequel called Spider-Man's Mysterio's Menace. So there's a lot of like weird how that one PlayStation game in 2000 really sort of spawned this game, which came out in 2001, and then spawned Spider-Man 2 Inter Electro, and then Spider-Man Mysterio's Menace. I mean, that's awesome. And I think that there was another, if I'm remembering correctly, right around this time, or maybe a couple years earlier, there was Spider-Man Streets of Fire, where you could play as Daredevil and Spider-Man together. The Spider-Man had a lot of games, is all I'm saying.
I'm trying to think right now whether Spider-Man or Batman has more games that I've looked at so far. And, I mean, it's pretty close, I know that.
Well, it depends on what you count as a Spider-Man game. So do you count, for example, Spider-Man games where he guest stars? So like, for example, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1, 2, and 3, Spider-Man is in all of those. Does he count as having more games? Because there are not as many Justice League games, and yes, there are a lot of Batman games, but Spider-Man had a game with Captain America. There's Spider-Man and Captain America, the Doctor Doom's Revenge, or Castle of Doctor Doom thing, Spider-Man Questro, I think, Spider-Man 2600. I'm doing this as much as I can from memory, so give me a second. Spider-Man Streets of Fire, Maximum Carnage, Separation Anxiety, Spider-Man for the PlayStation. Then there's Spider-Man for the Super Nintendo. There is Spider-Man, the three games we just talked about. Then there's the Ultimate Spider-Man video game that came out in whatever 2004 that Brian Michael Bendis worked on. Then the Spider-Man movie games, so Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3. And then Spider-Man PlayStation 4. I think Spider-Man has had more games, just off the top of my head. I'm sure there are a lot more than I'm not even remembering, but that's what I've got.
It's an interesting little thing deciding what you're going to count. Like, I would definitely count Spider-Man and X-Men Arcade's Revenge.
Right, exactly.
But I don't know how much of a team up I would want to let it go. Like, War of the Gems? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. So Spider-Man versus Capcom, unlike X-Men versus Capcom or X-Men versus Street Fighter, no, right? Because Spider-Man's not in that. But Marvel versus Capcom? That's crazy. Or the Marvel Superheroes fighting game. You know, Marvel Superheroes, you know? Like, yeah, these are challenging questions to ask.
And as you said, this game did come out in 2001. It also has a level in the World Trade Center. Bad timing. I think that's all we really need to say about that. I hit enough of that in the Inter Electro episode, and people can go back and listen to that one.
If you think about it, they had to take out the World Trade Center trailer for the Spider-Man movie. You know, where they had Spider-Man had webbed the helicopter between the buildings of the World Trade Center. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
Yeah, so, you know, or in Spider-Man cartoon from the 1990s, you know, if you remember, in the early 90s, before what happened on September 11th, you know, there was a bombing in the 90s at the World Trade Center, and Kraven and Spider-Man team up and find a bad guy who was buried in the original debris of the World Trade Center. I mean, the World Trade Center, especially living in New York, is such a landmark. You know, or even taking it out of Spider-Man, watching old episodes of Friends where they cut to the World Trade Center. You know, it is such a preeminent thing. And I think it really does, in a lot of ways, cast a pallor, not negatively necessarily, but a historical pallor over the world pre 9/11 and post 9/11, both in terms of superhero fiction, but also in terms of Spider-Man and our national consciousness in terms of thinking about the things that we look for in our entertainment.
New York as a setting is such a big part of Spider-Man as a character too, and it's just really hard to take that out of him.
Right.
And I can't really think of anybody who does it that much better.
Yeah, I don't think there's any character, because you remember, like, the Incredible Hulk is very much a desert-based character, right? And Captain America is very much, like, centered in Washington, D.C., you know? And Batman's centered in Gotham. But all of those things are not the world outside your window, you know? That's what's really interesting, is Spider-Man is very much a world outside your window kind of character. And I think that really makes a huge difference. So it is interesting to see that in this game. And I think I just found the list of all the Spider-Man games that he has ever. Spider-Man has appeared in over 15 different gaming platforms. But it's interesting to probably go back and play these other games and see how much the World Trade Center, which I think was built in 1976. I remember correctly, maybe I'm wrong, but how much it has been preeminent in Spider-Man fiction since then. Sorry, it was built in 1973, I was close. But it'd be interesting to see sort of how all of this sort of comes together in terms of, because generally I think of Spider-Man and I think of like the Chrysler Building, or I think the Empire State Building, which is frequently seen around. And even in the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, the Kingpin headquarters was in the Chrysler Building. They even made a Chrysler Building playset for the Kingpin. You know, so it is interesting to see how many of these landmarks become, how many of these landmarks actually become so codified in Spider-Man's history and his visual iconography. Oh my God, I forgot about Spider-Man Friend or Foe. Oh, and Spider-Man Web of Shadows, which was so good. Did you play that one?
I have started both of those just well enough to see that my discs work.
Right, and then Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions.
Same thing
Spider-Man,
with that one.
And Spider-Man Edge of Time. I forgot about Edge of Time. Oh my goodness. So all to say, and then, oh, and they did one for the Andrew Garfield movies too. So clearly there have been a lot of Spider-Man games. I think more than Batman games, if I'm being honest.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think people like Spider-Man.
I mean, if we're being honest, the only person I know who really doesn't like Spider-Man is J. Jonah Jameson.
Well, speaking of Jameson, what do you think this game really gets wrong about Spider-Man?
I don't know if there's anything that this game really gets wrong about Spider-Man, per se, but there are things that I would have liked to see a little bit more of. I think that, for example, using the Daily Bugle to give you a clue about what to do in that level is it's a very cute game mechanic, don't get me wrong. But I do feel like it would have been great to also countercut it with Jameson says, the last thing I want to do is have Spider-Man blow up the gearbox for it. You know what I mean? There is an opportunity to lean in a little bit more, especially at this game. Lean in a little bit more on Mary Jane. Lean in a little bit more on the supporting cast. Get a little help from Black Cat or whatever. I do love that there are great pickups, and I do love a lot of the game mechanics, and remembering that this is for a Game Boy Color. One of my favorite game mechanics of any Spider-Man game started, I think, with the Sega Genesis, but I think it was in Spider-Man versus the Kingpin. And you got to, during your adventure, you could take pictures and you just hit like the select button and it took a screenshot of whatever it was you were doing. And at the end of every level, you would get money. And the amount of money you got for your screenshots was the amount of money the Daily Bugle gave you to buy web, and then you could use to buy web fluid, which I thought was really cool because you wouldn't pick up web fluid randomly. You have to go in and buy it. And that was kind of a cool mechanic. So I do think that while there isn't a lot that it gets wrong, I mean, I'm not a fan of the music, but I don't think there's a lot that actually it gets hardcore wrong. There are things that I do wish it had a little bit more, that there was a little bit more texture and a little bit more a little bit more nuance too, but by and large I was really happy with it. What about you?
For me, the main thing is how many people weren't there. Like, I was really expecting to see Jameson somewhere. I mean, Jameson's always yelling at Spider-Man. How do you not have him in there, especially with a bugle? You had no girlfriend for Spider-Man at all, and he's just a character that seems to always be, oh no, I need a girlfriend, or yay, I have a girlfriend.
Yeah, so for me, the biggest challenge I have with superhero games, by and large, and it's not every superhero game, mind you, but the biggest thing I have is for superhero games, by and large. Now, some of the movie games don't do this. Like, some of the Tobey Maguire-based games don't have this. They give you the opportunity to change in and out of costume. But that's what I think is really important. The ability to change from Peter Parker to Spider-Man, whatever game you're doing, you should have that because it's really important. My belief is always that a secret identity should give you access to resources that you could not get as a superhero. Peter Parker's relationship to Jameson is better than Spider-Man's relationship to Jameson. So say you need information about the Lizard, right? Spider-Man's not gonna go into Jameson's office and be like, tell me about the Lizard. No, you could change and then you could go in as Peter Parker and say, hey, what's this about the Lizard? I hear he's crazy. And I'd be like, listen, Parker, get me pictures of Spider-Man fighting that Lizard. Do it or you're fired. You know, that to me is that to me would be a fun mechanic. You know, I do like that they used the Daily Bugle. I feel like that was a nice attaboy or lampshade, but I agree with you. I do feel like it could have leaned in more on the supporting cast and given us a little bit more than just Aunt May was captured. You know, whether it was MJ or whether it was Black Cat, I think about Maximum Carnage, right? Even the cutscenes had Peter Parker in the cutscenes, you know, and then you could get pickups that would bring you Firestar, or would bring you the Black Cat, or would bring you Captain America, or Iron Fist. And that to me would have been, I think, a little better in terms of Spider-Man and the greater world.
I mean, I don't even care if they had a like game important reason for being there. Just the fact that you could have Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy or any of the other people Spider-Man was kind of going after, then, you know, just have a little appearance there. Like, oh, Peter, what are you going to do about your aunt?
Right.
All you need is a throwaway line and I'm good.
Right. Yeah, and so that to me is really interesting. I do love that there are games like, for example, in the Amazing Spider-Man Lethal Foes, right? There's a cameo by Speedball and the Human Torch and Iron Fist. And that to me is kind of cool. Like, that's awesome, you know? That to me is really cool. And that to me is what I feel like this game could have done a little bit more of in, you know, Spider-Man Web of Fire. You know, I think that's the one. You know, Daredevil shows up. That to me is really cool. Yeah, give me that kind of stuff where you've got a little bit of a little bit more nuance. I do like the newspaper. I do like the newspaper style cutscenes, but I agree with you. It just needed to be a little bit. There just needed to be a little bit more to it.
What do you think this game really gets right about Spider-Man?
Well, I think it makes the powers fascinating. I mean, I think it gets the powers right. I think it gets the... you can't get lost in a level, which I really appreciate. It's very difficult to... you can't get too far and be like, oh, I'm trapped somewhere. I love that Spider-Man is able to use his ability to crawl somewhere and sneak into small passages. I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, the use of spider sense, which I think is great. I mean, I think it gets the bad guys right. I mean, those levels are fun levels. Watching Mysterio, which I think is my favorite boss battle, I think it's fantastic. And I think the settings are great. I mean, that going to Coney Island to fight Mysterio is just clever. And that to me is just a tremendous amount of fun. I do wish, I do like the ending too. I do think that it's a very sweet little ending, albeit a little pat, but still very sweet. You know, it's a happy ending.
Yeah, I mean, almost everything they do is, you know, besides the things we've already talked about where we wish they would have done more, everything that they actually do, I think, is just a really good representation of the Spider-Man character, the Spider-Man world you're getting into when you start to read the comics. Just everything.
Yeah, I mean, I was just had such a tremendous amount of fun playing the game. It isn't, like I said before, there isn't a lot of room for nuance in terms of storytelling, I think, just because the settings at the time. But I was really, really happy with what it is I did get. It is really fun. It is casual. It's not too difficult, which makes it really fun. And that's really great. I do love that it's just fun to play. I do love that it's easy to get through. I love that it's just true to Spider-Man. Unlike other Spider-Man games where you can't, for example, crawl on the walls. Like, for example, I love the Ultimate Alliance games, but you can't crawl on the walls playing those games. You know, like, you can swing, awesome, but here you actually feel like you're crawling, and that's kind of fun. I love the Spider-Man PlayStation games because you can actually crawl on the walls. That to me is fun, and having that mechanic in this makes it really interesting. You're not just Batman swinging from ledge to ledge. No, you're Spider-Man. And that's cool.
If you had somebody who wanted to get into Spider-Man, ignoring the fact that there are other games that exist, because, I mean, let's be fair, if you can get a game that's not on a little handheld thing, you're going to have better games that can show you more. But would you hand somebody this game as a bit of a Spider-Man primer course?
I would hand somebody this game as a Spider-Man primer course if I could choose one or two other games to also play. So basically, I would hand them a sort of a, I would put this as part of a generational Spider-Man game pack. So, for example, I would give them Spider-Man from the Atari 2600 to play. Right, I would give them this game to play, and then I would give them either Spider-Man for the PS4 or Spider-Man for the PlayStation 1 and have them play that and just have them see sort of the nuances, because I mean there's so much there in terms of the history of Spider-Man. As difficult as that Spider-Man game is for the Atari 2600, there's a lot to be said for there's a lot to be said for playing these games and just enjoying the imagination that comes from playing these games. I mean, people put a lot of time and effort and energy into game design and into adding nuance to how these characters move. And even from my own video game and development and level development standpoint, you know, it's not easy to put this stuff together. And the fact that people really sort of put the time and the care and the energy into making this game, even 20 years ago, is really remarkable. It feels like a fun game. It doesn't feel like a reskinned version of anything else. No, this feels like a really fun, authentic, nuanced game made by people who read Spider-Man comics and like Spider-Man. You know, I never felt like, I don't feel like the game designers were embarrassed by Spider-Man making this.
I think you might be the first person who said that you wanted to pair it with other games.
Yeah, as a part of like a legacy of Spider-Man collection.
I don't know how we got this many episodes in before somebody decided they wanted to do that.
Yeah, like a 3-pack.
I mean, I don't know if I would hand somebody this one as their first thing, but I would definitely hand it to them pretty early.
Yeah, so I would do, if you were like, David, tell me about Spider-Man games, I would be like, you have to start with the Atari 2600, because that is very basic, but you still get the basic idea. You don't understand Spider-Man, but you know that Spider-Man needs to web swing. You know Spider-Man needs to do the things that he does in order to rescue Mary Jane from Green Goblin. Fantastic. I'd probably put this game as number two, and then put another game that sort of, because this is a side scroller. Ultimately, this is a side scroller game. You know, Spider-Man from the 2600 is not. It's more a puzzle platformer. You know, and what's interesting about the PlayStation game, or even the one from even the modern version, the PlayStation 4/5 version, is that that's running on a totally different engine too. So you get to see Spider-Man from all of these different sort of levels that sort of show his versatility in a gaming development sense. It'd be like handing somebody, rather than a first issue of Spider-Man, a collection that says Spider-Man from the 1960s to today collection. It's basically how I would do it. I would just make this a part of a 3-game or 4-game set.
Well, there's basically no way you can go wrong there.
Yeah. What one hero who is not in the game would you have added? And how do you think that that would have changed the game?
Well, the easy answer is Daredevil, because you still have the New York connection. But I think that gets done too often.
Right.
See, this is way too early to have Deadpool in there. That's another way too easy answer. I would probably want to go Human Torch.
See, I would go Black Cat, because from a mechanic standpoint, a lot of what Black Cat does is the same stuff Spider-Man does. She has a grapple claw. She can stick to the side of walls. You can literally use her as your... You could connect your Game Boy Color to another Game Boy Color and do two-player. Where one person's playing through the level as Spider-Man and the other one's playing through the level as Black Cat.
Yeah, but that's you thinking like a game designer and me just thinking like, how can I make this thing insanely broken?
Yeah, I mean, Human Torch would totally crush that game.
I mean, my real answer would be, let's put Ghost Spider in it, but that's just because I want Ghost Spider in everything. The world needs more Spider-Gwen.
I just realized you said Ghost Spider and not Ghost Rider. And I was trying to think about, like, how you would put Ghost Rider, like, driving up the roller coaster.
Oh, that'd be fun too, though. I don't know, there's too many good possibilities. Spider-Man just hangs out with too many fun people.
Right. And what one villain who wasn't in it would you have liked to have seen?
I'd probably want to... I would definitely want to stay away from either of the goblins. And Rhino, just because Rhino is in everything.
Right.
Same thing with both of the goblins. I would probably go Morbius. I don't think he would play nicely with the Sinister Six stuff, but the Sinister Six don't usually play nice with each other anyway, so that could actually work out.
Yeah, for me, I would probably go out. I would go out of pocket a little bit on this. And while he wouldn't necessarily play well with the Sinister Six stuff, I would have either gone Living Monolith or Sandman, but bigger. Like, the challenge is that I felt like Sandman, whenever I think of Sandman, I think of somebody super huge, like kind of like Apocalypse or Onslaught when you play them in those fighting games. Like, I wouldn't put Venom or Carnage in it, but I would have put somebody so big that it would have made it so monumentally difficult. Like, you would have had to, as a player, hit Sandman in the head and once, or hit him in the legs or hit him in the arms 3 times. And then the level would scroll up and you'd have to hit him in the chest 3 times and then scroll up before finally hitting him in the head 3 times, you know, while obviously dodging sandblasts or whatever. But just give something that level.
Would you replace the Sandman that's in there, or would you have it as an additional Sandman?
I would probably make him an additional Sandman. Kind of like sometimes you fight a boss in a level, and then they're like, ha ha ha, that wasn't my true form. And then his true form would be bigger.
Oh, that would be amazing. You need to go back and remake this game now.
Done. I will go back in time with my... I will just borrow Dr. Doom's time platform and totally do it.
Well, David, it has been great talking to you about all of this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
People can find me on Twitter at David Gallagher. or I'm also on davidgallagher.com. People can check out my scripts, people can read my tweets, and then my books are available on bookshop.org or amazon.com. You can check out the work I've done for Marvel, the work I've done for DC, or the video games I've written for Ubisoft.
And who do I have to yell at over at DC to get more Jessica Cruz stuff written?
You could yell at me. Well, you can yell at me. I can write it. And then I'll just put a fire under me. Or you can yell at Chris Conroy. Or you could yell at Jim Lee. I'm sure that can happen.
We need to make that happen.
Done. I'm really on a Darla Dudley kick right now. So that to me is going to be the character. She's the, if you've seen the Shazam movie, she's the young character who just doesn't stop talking at the age of six. And she, for me, would be like the Darla Dudley and Jessica Cruz need to team up and have some good fighting. Write some good bad guys like Black Adam and Sinestro. I'm there.
Yes, please go write that right now.
I just might do that. Chris, thank you so much for having me. This was an absolute pleasure. I'm really looking forward to going to play some more Spider-Man games now.
Oh, I know. There's so many.
So many. Man, that's so fun. Man, if you ever open up a YouTube channel where we can like virtually Twitch some of this, let me know, and I'm there for that.
I've thought about it. I might need to actually do it.
All right, man. Well, just let me know. Thank you so much for having me, Chris. This was an absolute pleasure.
As always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast or go to PlayComics.com, where I have links to all the social media things, show notes for all this, everything that you could possibly want about Play Comics, all at PlayComics.com, because I'm lazy and I only want to look in one spot. If you want to support the show, you can head on over there as well, where you can go to PlayComics.com/support, you know, really hard there, or you can find it in the menu. From there, you can have links to Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee and, you know, a few other things like that. You can help support the show, but, you know, you can always just force the podcast into other people's ear holes and support it that way, because that is always greatly appreciated. Don't forget that Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to other wonderfully geeky shows. Eventually, I'm going to remember that other words exist, but I've already said wonderful and I don't feel like recording this again. If you like the music that I'm really talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. Most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. A little peek behind the curtain over here. I told one of my friends that you filled the form out on the website, and he was like, holy crap, Chris, you made him fill out the form?
Yeah, I filled out the form.
It's like, my friend, he did it all by himself.
I was trying to be proactive.